Christopher Media, the Weedsman Podcast.
Cures rickets, polio, conjunctivitis,
AIDS.
AIDS.
Let's just go hog wild.
Begin the car accident, you just use a little bit and you'll be fine.
Yeah, rub it on your car and yourself. It'll fix your car and your bones.
Try this special trick to get out of traffic tickets with Rick Simpson oil.
Rub it on the cop. He'll just go away.
The Weedsman Podcast. Every Friday on iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.
It's one of those words that just stick out. I'm sorry. I couldn't let it go.
Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.
Do that again.
Yeah. I forget, like, we got this cranked.
And it's on a loop.
Media. Let's make some noise. From AsthmaCore Studios near Detroit, Michigan, it's Unregimented.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
No, it is not, sir. I shut that off. It's Unregimented, number 34. I don't know, it's 34. That's all I got. I'm Chris.
This is Aaron.
And this is Mike.
Yes, we have... We have a newcomer visiting us in the studio today.
In the octagon. Well, it's more of a T-shape, really. But yeah, Mikey, you want to use last name?
It doesn't matter. You can.
We'll call you Mike. Mikey.
That works for me.
Hey, thank you for listening, liking, and sharing Unregimented on Facebook, following us on Twitter at Unregimented Pod. You could subscribe to Unregimented on iTunes for free by clicking through the iTunes banner on ChristopherMedia.net. Android users, you're covered as well. You can find this show on Stitcher Radio. We also have the player right on the site there. You can now listen to a new episode of a Christopher Media show every day of the week. On Sundays, you got M&M Question Everything. Mondays, of course, Unregimented. Tuesday, you get the Weedsman Podcast Bonus Nugget. And whenever Todd gets around to it, you get the Toddzilla X-Pod. Wednesday, we got a new show. It's the Oddcast with Jenna and John. Thursday, your second dose of Unregimented for the week. Friday, you got the Weedsman Podcast. Saturday, another new show, The Captain's Table, for all you guys into nerd culture, we'll say. Your LARPing, your RPGs, video games, any kind of gaming, really. No one's going to cover it on The Captain's Table. So please check those out. They're all at ChristopherMedia.net. You can subscribe for free to all of them on iTunes. Stitcher as well. Hey, if you like what we do and you would like to show your support for us, you can donate to Christopher Media by using the PayPal button on ChristopherMedia.net. Please click through the Amazon banner on ChristopherMedia.net and bookmark the page. It won't cost you anything extra, and when you buy something, it will help to show your support for Christopher Media. If you're looking to launch your own website, please click through the HostGator banner at ChristopherMedia.net. That's who we use to host all of the Christopher Media shows. When you sign up for HostGator by clicking through our link, you are helping to support ChristopherMedia.net. DraftKings.com, daily fantasy sports leagues. No season-long commitment. You can enter free or paid contests and win your share of over $200 million in prizes. When you click through the DraftKings banner at ChristopherMedia.net, you will get a free first-time deposit bonus when you sign up for DraftKings.com.
But yeah, I guess I met Mike I met him through Guitar Center, my old job, because he is a musician, as we will talk about today, I'm sure. I'm just going to say that Mike is a very talented songwriter that we have with us today.
And musician.
Well, thank you.
And a very talented musician, too.
Well, thank you.
This guy can play just about anything, and I've never seen him do anything half-assed.
I'm very flattered, actually. That's new.
He whole-asses everything.
I whole-ass.
Yes, he goes whole-ass into everything.
Yeah, I don't know what half-assing means.
Ass first.
Oh, there's implications with that.
I did a turn at county that kind of set that up, so...
But,
this is an all-musician episode right here.
I would dare to say he's more of an accomplished musician than us, just from the fact he got to live the dream for a minute.
Well, yeah, you know...
As far as just touring and stuff. I mean, like...
That's something that, you and I, Chris, we've played in a number of bands, and we've been involved in music probably most of our adult life, but it's always kind of been peripherally. It's, playing in local bands, doing local shows, doing, that type of grind. You have actually, like, been out on the road and experienced that shit, and actually experienced playing at shows where people showed up to see you that weren't related.
Yeah.
That right there is an accomplishment in our eyes.
Actually received money after the gig.
Whoa.
That was a significant amount.
A few and far between were they significant, but it was usually enough to get to the next one. It wasn't the dream that I had imagined, though. I mean, when I was a kid, it was like, oh, you know, I see all these. I mean, when I was a kid, I was like playing like fake piano on the end of a coffee table, listening to like Extreme and, you know, all the MTV bands at the time. But, you know, they made it look so glamorous, which it's not. It's terrible. It's one of the worst experiences I've ever had.
Well, that's what everyone says about going on the road. It doesn't stop me from wanting to do it someday, although those days are the chances of that happening dwindle by the second. But
I don't know. It seemed like the allure of the road is what kept us going. Like, oh, what's around the next turn? Who's going to be at the next show? Or this agent was rumored to be on, you know, around the circuit. And it didn't ever matter. It was like, you know, oh, we're just a bunch of kids and we're going to make this happen. We're going to do this. You know, we had you know, I mean, even...
So it was like, tomorrow is going to be really cool, and then tomorrow is just another day.
Yeah, tomorrow was like, tomorrow is going to be really cool. And then every day that ended in Y or W was going to be really cool. Like, oh, tomorrow or Monday, that's the day. And it just never really stuck. But, I mean, it's more of a... It is an experience. I mean, I will definitely say that I'm who I am because of it. I mean, you don't really know how to make a little bit stretch until you have nothing. So that even set me up just for being a, you know, being a family man alone. Just that persona of not having... You know, having enough to even sustain myself, let alone seven dudes in a, you know, a closed off van with one working window and a terrible vent in the middle of August and in down, you know, downtown Florida.
Did you have to eventually ban Taco Bell trips?
No, there was no such thing as Taco Bell. That's the best thing about being poor, is that everybody can have gas all they want. You can eat anything. There's nothing. So your body's like eating itself, and it just lets off whatever your natural scent is. I mean, I guess it could be pretty bad.
From what I've heard, Taco Bell, that's top shelf.
Yeah.
For jamming in a van going on the road.
I will say that there was a couple nice folks in Royal Palm Beach that took us out to CeCe's once, and I say like once. There was this one time. The you know, the gold mine we hit, they took us out and we ate like fucking kings. That was awesome.
CeCe's?
Yeah, CeCe's Sizzler. Yeah, in Royal Palm Beach. I mean, we get out of the car, we're all of our eyes are sunken in because it's so hot in the van. Yeah. We've been sleeping in Florida for 5 days with all these different layover trips. You know, we were supposed to play this night and it gets canceled. And then you have three shows in a row and then nothing for 2 days, thinking like something's going to pop up. Mm-hmm. And pretty much just sat in a van, just slowly dwindling away. But, you know, it was definitely a good experience, and I'm glad I took it. And, I mean, I had other experiences that were a lot more profitable and a lot more sustainable. But the one that really sticks out is the first one, you know, and that's the one that just... Well, I wouldn't wish that my worst enemy. It was...
Oh, really? The first time out was
everything
the worst.
Like Bob Seger ever said?
it might as well have been. It was lonely. It sounded just like that saxophone.
Well, I mean, just if the highlight is eating at CeCe's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, you are not selling this to me at all. You're making me... I'm thinking I dodged a bullet.
I would walk into any random school on pizza day and order up before I went to CeCe's. Well, that is the lowest of the low. That's not even pizza.
I will say that down there, though, it is not like it is. Up here, you have CeCe's. You've already written your own doctor's note. You're going in. You have to see a physician after you've eaten. And especially here. If not, you're going to ICU. I mean, I've heard terrible stories here. But down there, it is... kind of gourmet. I mean, it's really good. It's really something.
Really?
I mean, also my comparison was 3 days with not eating, and then the one day I did eat was like an old cheese sandwich I found in my bag. God knows how long it was there. It winked at me before I ate it.
Like CeCe's. It didn't come out of the garbage. Great. Sign me up.
Yeah, it was all right. Like I said, the first one was the hardest one to get through. It was the loneliest one because, you know, first time being away from home, you know, you know, you got these seven guys. At the time, too, when I jumped in the van, I'd only known these guys for like 2 weeks. It was like, hey, you want to fill in? I'm like, oh, yeah, where are we going? Like, Florida. I'm like, oh, yeah, definitely, let's do it. And then it was like, well, hi, I'm Mike, by the way. I'll be sleeping next to you for the next, you know, 1,000 miles. So that... It was a learning experience on how to kind of cope with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult.
But do you feel like you bonded with? Did you bond with these guys the first time out? I guess that's the first question.
It took a few days to kind of feel out the bus to see whose limits were where, and you know who had like a heat temperament versus the guy who just needed to eat all the time. And you know, if he didn't eat, you know, it was like the whole Snickers commercial, just like that.
Who had the woman bladder?
Yeah, that was me, unfortunately. But I had to pee like every 5 seconds. Actually, a funny story about that is one time I was like, I gotta piss again. They're like, dude, you literally just went. And I'm like, what? I can't hold it. I mean, like, I got the bladder of a pregnant lady.
Grab an empty bottle.
No.
Grab that empty Mountain Dew bottle.
That had already happened. I'd already gone through all of our bottles. I'd gone through all of our water bottles. So at this point, we decided that the next rest stop, we were going to buy a drill and put a hole in the ground.
Oh, Jesus.
I got a transmission funnel that had the long straw. I just put it in the bottom.
That is awesome.
And I just pissed in that for a while. And then I hit the point where we were like in this like sustained area of mountainside where there was nowhere to go. And we're like, well, we're not stopping. We don't have time. And one of the guys like, dude, I really got to go to the bathroom. And he had to drop boom boom. So I'm like, well, let's make that hole a little wider.
That's not going to fit down the funnel.
Let's make that hole a little wider. We'll put, you know, we'll get you some comfort. We'll get some pillows around there. It'll be just like at home. So the whole time he decides.
No way.
I swear to God. I swear to God. The guy just shit right.
Think about being in the car behind the van.
Oh, I know that.
That van's taking a shit.
I know that. It looked like we were leaking sludgy transmission. It was so bad. I remember getting out the next day after this happened to unload the equipment out of the trailer, and there's just brown all over this pumpkin orange, you know, trailer we had from the 1970s. It was terrible.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, it was pretty wonderful. I gotta admit, in my days of engineering, I put that one at the top of the list.
It's like that. What was that Nintendo game where you drove the Spy Hunter? You leave it an oil slick behind you.
It was like Mario Kart, but there was absolutely. There was nobody to oil slick behind us. We were just
picturing this like little circle of like a star and a tortoise shell going around the van, and it just stops on poop.
Oh, it's terrible.
Oh,
man. I remember being in an uncomfortable moment, though, because I was sitting in the pilot seat, and it was right between the two pilot seats. And you just sit there looking up with these doe eyes, like, don't look at me. You know? I'm like, man, you got to do your thing, but don't look at me. Like, it's making me uncomfortable, but yeah, it was pretty rough. Good thing about that, though, was instant ventilation. No scent, just right out.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, no issues.
Was it...
It's Mario Kart music.
Really? I don't remember this music.
That's for the
what was the circuit. What was the Dave Matthews thing that happened? Remember when
when he emptied his bus toilet into the Chicago River, only there was a tourist boat.
That's right.
Full of the greenkeepers. Were they all of them were for environmental activists, and it just dumped right on top. That was like the irony of the whole thing, is they're there to like promote use natural resources, and they were just trying to give some back. They were so pissed.
Yeah, I got something for you to recycle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, here, recycle this, dicks.
I already recycled it. So, but... blah, blah, blah. I asked you about it, if you bonded with these guys, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, I imagine just the idea of not only playing in a band with these guys, but being forced into a van with these guys.
Absolutely.
You don't really have a choice. You kind of have to bond almost.
Yeah.
Get in the van.
Yeah. I had a pillowcase over my head the first 16 hours. No. They just kind of picked me up. No, they ended up, we played shows together on and off for some years. Mm-hmm. I'd known these guys in and out. I just didn't know them. I just knew of them. More so like the, you know, the guy at the copy machine you see once a week. Like, hey, how you doing? You know,
right.
How's your day? Oh, good. Oh, cool, man. We'll see you later. You know, good luck to you out there. But these guys were more so, this very first tour I went on to, these guys were more so, you know, like, well acquainted with. I just didn't know them on a personal level. So getting into that kind of a commitment, you know, I would say we bonded eventually. I'd say it took more than, you know, probably a good couple hundred miles before we even had a conversation flow that was worth even keeping.
Yeah.
But once we did, I mean, we were all really good friends for quite some time after that. I mean, I continued to play with them, and I got back, actually, there. That's actually what the van looked just like.
We have footage of you being picked up.
Wait, who's this guy?
Well, that's Blue.
Yeah.
It's an old Navy vet who hangs around my store a lot. Don't worry about it. He's legit.
He only wants to pledge.
Are you kidding me? The old man River won't shut up about it.
This is the good part. If you tell anybody about this, I'll fucking kill you. No, I'm just kidding. We'll have him back by dinner. Sorry. That's my movie Tourette's going off.
That's okay. Actually, if you look at this van, and take out the passenger window would have had trouble going past three quarters.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get a quarter down on that. The front driver's window worked. The wings on both passenger and driver worked. But there was no other windows, just like that. How they have that circle window, none of that. The rear windows didn't pop. In fact, one of them was broken, so we installed an HVAC vent that you put on the side of a home, you know, to kind of to better pull the air out. And yeah, that's pretty much what we did. We ended up using, just like how they have the vents out there, how they have the shades, mm-hmm, but no window. And when it rained, oh my God, it was the worst.
That's an Econo line, right? That's a Ford.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So ours was more of like a Dodge.
That shit's out of print.
Yeah.
They don't make them anymore. Yeah,
they just stopped this year.
Well, I can't say it was vintage or anything like that. It was shitty. It looked so bad. In fact, if it weren't for that van, and this is kind of interesting, I ended up finding out that the lead guitarist of this group and I were related, or I'm sorry, the rhythm guitarist and I were related.
Yeah.
Because of the rusted
Were you both conceived in the van?
No. I don't know. I don't know. We're about the same age. It's possible.
I would say like his parents had it, and then years later, your dad bought it.
No. It wasn't that good. It was just I knew the last name. I could make it out by the rust stains of where the letters were at one point, because back then they used to actually use letters and panel them on, and it looked nice.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So by the bolt marks alone, I was like, hey, there's no way that your dad is this guy's guy. That's my dad. Like, are you kidding me? I just went over your guys' house like 6 months ago for dinner. He's like, oh yeah, I haven't lived there in years, but yeah, that's played. So it kind of worked out that he was like my second cousin. So after that, yeah, we were definitely bonded. Like, oh cool, man, what's up? You know, blah blah blah. You know,
yeah.
So I mean, that kind of worked in my favor. But if it weren't for that terrible van, we probably would have had some struggles kind of getting to know each other.
Well, yeah, he'd been walking everywhere.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
No one wants to pick up five guys with gear and their thumbs out.
And a radio flyer just pulling it all behind us, looking like a little rascal.
We saved up enough money from the last gig. We're getting a bike.
We're going to pull it. It's going to be great. Yeah, that's pretty much how it went, though.
But you said first time out was the worst.
Yes.
Why, what makes it so bad? Were you unprepared for what happened?
Extremely unprepared.
Or was it just, it seemed like the trip where everything went wrong?
Well, I can't say that everything went wrong, but there was a very large quantity of wrongness going on. But more so, it was just like, I went out there and, the agreement was, you know, because I was so last minute for me, like, don't worry about a lot of this. We'll take care of it for you. We'll take care of it for you. And their definition of we'll take care of it for you is
we got you a seat.
Yeah, we got
there's room for you.
You got room and you got board. I hope you don't mind sleeping in this van. It's hot as fuck. It's like, you know, it's terrible. But
yeah.
I didn't really bring a lot.
Everybody
of,
sleep in the van or yeah, they just
everybody
you?
Slept in the van. Yeah, yeah. I wish that was at least, you know, if I had some room. But no, I was like huddled up in the fetal position against that terrible vented window.
How long did you go when you were on tour the first time? How long did you go before you jerked off?
Oh God, I don't think I did.
Six.
I don't think I think I was too afraid to.
Right? Six, 7 hours.
Because, I mean, I can't imagine. Stop. Yeah, I can't imagine rest stops are any fun to jerk off at.
No, they're extremely uncomfortable. Because you hear, like, all these strangers walking, you hear all the change, you hear their keys bouncing around, and then, for some reason, because you're just that guy, or I don't know if anybody else is, but, like, if I'm in a stall and someone walks in, I just judge my neighbor by his shoe selection. You know, they walk in like he's wearing loafers. This is going to be terrible. You know, because nobody in loafers shits quiet. Nobody is
going to take it. Are you willing to go on record saying that?
I would put some money. You
know, people in loafers? Noisy shitters.
I was just saying, this is nobody.
Right, so what shoe has the quietest thumb there?
That's the type of profiling I'd never expect to encounter.
Well, I would say the quietest shitter.
Flip-flops?
Yes.
They're laid back?
The quietest shitter either wears flip-flops or sandals with socks.
Well, they're probably the most careful shitters.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You don't have a lot of room for air. You have loafers, you can just shit.
Good point.
It's already in the name loafers. I mean, it coins right to pinch and a lobe. It's perfect.
Hey, you get a little shit on your shoes, you kick them off when you get home, leave them outside or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Which brings me to the next one, the shit kickers. No, but the guys that come in wearing construction boots, you know, it's going to be a rough ride because they definitely did not have, you know.
They're bearing down. They got to get all that hoagie out right now.
That's a terrible lunch, and I'm about to hear it. That's terrible.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
The things the road has taught you, my friend.
I have a hard enough time keeping concentration just moving my own shit out when other people, like, come in. You know, Not that I'm a shy shitter. Because there are a lot of people who just like...
Good Lord.
Like,
he's the koi crapper, man.
Maybe it's because of how many times I do it per day. I don't think I'm as regular as most people. But there are a lot of people who just manage to train their bowels till they just move them at home.
Oh, hell the fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, every morning, bam. That's all you need.
I'm like a once or twice a week kind of guy. I don't understand how people even get to go. Like, people get to go every day. I'm like, you're so fucking lucky.
You need like, to go to a doctor.
You have
man.
No idea how lucky you are.
So you're built for the road.
Oh,
then.
God. Yeah, dude. Like, I
eat a lot of cheese. I mean, that's not
I don't want to say yes, but yeah, I do, actually.
Well, so do I.
Cheese binds you up.
See, and that's what I've been told. But if I don't eat cheese, nothing changes. Nothing. And I drink a lot of coffee, and that does. And I've heard like that's the way to do it: a coffee and a cigarette. And I will overdo both.
Oh yeah, I remember back in the one of the most underrated diuretics is a cigarette. Remember first thing in the morning, you're hitting that cigarette.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, you feel your gut clench, and you're off to the races. we keep it classy, by the way, here on the regiment. I don't know if you figured it out in 34 episodes. This one's for the family. Gather around grandma.
Yeah, well,
little Susie.
I mean, normally I would get to the question of where is the strangest place you shat, but we already covered that one like right out of the gate. That was like the first story.
Actually,
like, shitting in a moving vehicle.
I didn't do that.
It didn't have a toilet.
Strangest place you shat.
I-94. I just made it. I didn't actually use it. I am one of the shy shitters. I can't just drop trowel and go for gold no matter where I am.
How did you go in county? Well, you only go once or twice a week, so if you're only in for 24 hours.
Look at me. I got the physique of like a fucking 12-year-old boy. I was getting my shit pushed in if I was in county. There's no way it was coming out anyway, so.
I don't know. If I got a shit, I got a shit. But I am pee shy sometimes in public.
That I've never had an issue with.
Really?
I can run and piss at the same time in a parking lot. I've done that too.
I have drunk. I have walked while urinating.
Yeah.
I've attempted. I can't do that.
You got a waddle, but you can get it done.
I've seen it.
I was sprinting. We were at this show. We played out in Marlette. It was another CC's, obviously, but it wasn't a pizza place this time. It was a cyber cafe.
Oh, okay.
And so we actually, my wife's brother and I were in this band together, and we had some friends as well that were in this, that we were friends for quite some time, but we had a long trip out there, snowstorm, pounded energy drinks, trying to stay awake. It had been quite the long day. And we get out there, and I'd had to piss since probably about 20 minutes into the ride, and everybody else in the vehicle as well. So we get to this place we're going. We get out real fast. I'll hop out. Like, okay, let's go over here to this dumpster and take a piss, and we'll go. And we'll get everything unloaded. And this cop pulls in right as all of us just open the flaps of the collar, you know, where it looks like you have, like, the nice, like, dress shirt kind of feel when you just have your pants just parted just enough. So we're going in the dumpster. And we see this guy, this cop, whatever, and the other kid yells, "Cop." You know, because I'm like, oh shit, I'm here. I am. I'm wank out. I gotta run. So I'm sprinting through cars, just going all over everybody's windows and doors. And there's people everywhere. And I remember my brother-in-law. He is booking ass behind me. I'm like, he's got to stay away from me. If he gets close enough, he's gonna piss on my heels. And then our other buddy pops around, and he just misses my knees. And we're all running kind of in a line now. We're kind of staggered off in zigzags, making sure we're not hitting each other. But
you're all pissing.
All of us. Yes.
I couldn't do that.
I mean, it was probably like the longest 15, 20 seconds of my life.
The only way I would be able to stop is if I pinched it off, and I couldn't do it, and I could not continue to piss while running. So I would either be running with my hand down my pants, or I would just be standing there still pissing going, I guess you caught me.
Just stone faced. Yeah.
Just like, listen. I got to finish what I'm doing here. Like, I'll be with you in a second.
Yeah, that's all. So I ran that ticket. I'll meet you over in a second. I just got to shake this off. Yeah. It was interesting.
Rich is not here.
Well, I'd be shaking it off forever. Like, just hoping the cop leaves, like, I'm not done yet.
Rich is not here, but I have to do this.
So blackout drunk, probably pissed in her mouth.
While talking about it.
There's Rich.
I had to grab that when I was editing that. I was like, that's perfect. That's gift that keeps on giving right there.
So would you say then the first time out was horrendous, the road got easier thereafter?
It does get easier as you kind of understand what you're going up against. I mean, like I said, this
right, so it's all about
preparation and kind of experience. The experience of like, I think bogging it is like the best thing you can ever have.
Blogging it. Actually, is that what you said? Blogging?
No, bogging, as in B-O-G, as in just tearing your nose diving.
Writing, sharing your experience with other people online.
No, yeah.
in a snarky manner.
You know, just by being able to kind of know what it takes, you know, to absolutely fail makes you a lot more prepared for, just like anything else, you know, it's just kind of just knowing better, you know, and going at it again. And that was the biggest thing I had an issue with, was the first time I went out, I was so unprepared. I didn't bring the things you needed, the necessities, the essentials. I didn't pack light. I didn't
toothpaste,
know what that...
deodorant.
I brought all that stuff, you know, but like I didn't bring like granola bars, which is a huge thing on the road. Like after the second or third time I went out, I remember like this guy, we were going to a club down in, I think it was at the Atomic Garage in, I think it was Fort Pierce, Florida. And this guy there, old timer, he's, you know, strumming along on his little banjo, just kind of telling stories of the way it was as people are walking by him. No one's paying attention to him. And he's got a little tip bucket. I stopped, gave a little bit of change and listened for a minute. And he finishes up his thing and he starts talking to me about things he did on the road, yada, yada, yada. And starts giving me little hints. And the one thing he told me that I was like forever in debt for was, and I don't know, it's such an obvious thing, but granola bars will really fill you up. And they'll fill you up to the point where you're full after two and you can't eat anything else.
Yeah.
And that was what I, we ended up getting, you know, getting a bunch of those after that. And I was never hungry on tour. I was never in that situation.
Yeah.
So if he's out there still and he's not, I mean, by this time he's got to be dead by now, but if he's not, you know, thank you again for all your wisdom. It did not go to waste.
Thank you, Road Hippie.
Absolutely.
So it's nothing like this video. Has Motley Crue lied to us?
No, see, Motley Crue didn't lie to you. They probably just had a lot of money. It makes it a little bit different. I had encountered bands that were doing really well on the road, and that was like getting punched in the face as hard as someone could possibly do to you. Because they're telling you all their wonderful glam store. Oh, we're staying at the Marriott, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, we're staying across the street at the Dunkin' Donuts parking lot.
Right.
I mean, that's where we're at.
That's the thing is, it seems like no matter what your state, how much money you're making off your tour or whatever, everybody has something bad to say about being on tour.
Absolutely.
It's just a slog, whether you're staying at the Marriott or sleeping in the van.
Yeah, and a lot of it too comes up being the emotional turmoil is real. I mean, yeah, because if you tank it one night and people don't like you, I mean you're far from home. You don't have that little. I mean that's where your bond with your bandmates is the biggest, because that's when you're like, hey man, I'm feeling down from that. That really kind of messed me up, and they can pick you back up. You know, it's one show, yada yada yada. But you know, at this point, even my first tour, I didn't have that bond yet. I couldn't just tell them, I'm really upset about this. I'd already been judged enough for my shy bladder, so I was trying to keep to myself, you know. And I remember calling home and being near tears, just like they didn't like it, you know. They didn't dig it,
yeah.
You know? But it was one of those things. It's give and take. There's always, you can always crutch on something to be upset about. You know, there's always that crutch on depression if you want it. But happily, I'm like I said, if it weren't for that, you know, just can't wait, that's amazing.
I think there are certain people that have kind of like a gypsy mentality, maybe you call it, but that's nowhere near the majority of people. I think just being on the road and seeing like new things every day, which sounds cool, but it can just be unsettling to most people.
I can kind of speak to this, you know.
Well, yeah, you travel a lot, and
and everyone thinks I'm seeing all this cool shit. Guess what I see? I see all these hotel rooms and all these places that I go.
Right. That's the other thing is, it's not like you have all this time for sightseeing when you're visiting all these places you've never been before.
So absolutely not.
You're not really seeing the cities. You're seeing the club and the hotel room or the parking lot at the Walmart city.
There's like
Walmart parking lot could probably tell you a lot about a city.
I see lots of hotel rooms. I see lots of grocery stores.
Yeah.
I see lots of restaurants.
Well, there's an interesting question, I think. Did you meet a lot of people on the road, people that you could have conversations with, and do you feel like you saw representatives of the city, or were you just seeing representatives of like this specific scene in this town?
I think that, like, and that's the thing here in you know, Detroit and the surrounding areas, is that when we do go to a show, you're seeing just that scene of people. It's not like a multi, you know, like a Motley Crue-esque, you know, kind of feel. It's not a lot of different people. It is just one crowd that comes out to a lot of those shows.
Right.
Down south, when you pass, like, you know, the Dixieland, when you pass, like, Kentucky, after that, it's pretty much just mixed culture. I mean, there's people there that are more so geared towards country music, but came out for a good time. Whether it's, you know, a thrash metal or not, they don't really care.
Right, because you have, like, the club that everybody hangs out at.
Everybody kind of just meets up and has a good time. And that's, for me, that made a lot more, it was a lot more synergy between the crowd and the performer, because the performer's not having to go there thinking, these guys only listen to this, they're going to judge me based on this. They're more so like, these guys came here for a good time, and we just got to make sure that we stay happy enough to make, you know, to convince them that this is good time music. And realistically, that's, you know, down there you get a lot of really good feedback.
Right, because if you're going to a situation where you have an audience of people that you know came to see you, you have certain preconceptions about what they want to see and how this show is going to go.
Absolutely.
And when you step into a situation where you're like, hey, a good number of people here have never seen me on stage before, I have no idea who the fuck I am, I've got to win them over, I've got to put my best foot forward.
Right.
You're kind of in a different mindset.
Absolutely. And you also get kind of a clean slate. Like, you know, last night I played a show in Chicago and I was crazy. And now that we're here in, you know, whatever, Lake Station, Indiana, a little armpit town, but now that we're in Lake Station, Indiana, I can be a reserve drummer. I can focus my time, you know, in what I'm doing versus just going, you know, batshit crazy to impress a bunch of people that want to see that. You know, you go to places like that, especially across the Midwest. Midwest is very big on just everybody kind of hanging out in the same area, just like they are kind of down south, but more so like we play those towns and there is nothing else. They don't have, you know, five different options to do something for the night. If it's Friday, you're at Eagle Theater. That's where you're at.
Right.
You know, you're going to be at the Eagle Theater, and it's a basement of a VFW hall. It is not comfortable, you know, and that they're all full of smoke. You know, everybody from 12 to 49 meets there, and everybody smokes, so you can't even see your buddies anymore. And that's how it is when you get, like, Lake Station, Indiana, the biggest... I mean, that's the biggest example I could ever give. If any,
Lake Station?
Yes, Lake Station, Indiana. It is... a wonderful town. I mean, I liked it a lot. I liked, you know, their Wendy's there. Everybody was in overalls. It was kind of charming, you know. And the gas stations were a little unnerving because we did not belong there in their eyes, and that was fine. I mean, we're flamboyantly dressed. I think I was wearing, like, booty shorts with a rainbow band on them. And, you know, I had a stage persona I had to uphold. But in those places, you might want to research and alter that, you know, because you don't get the kind of look. So going into it, they already had the conception, you know, misconception that I was going to just, you know, I don't know, probably just get up and shake it for them. But, you know, when we started playing, it was a little different story. It was a lot, you know, a lot of fun. But those
are
the
making them feel those feelings they've been trying to repress.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, it was definitely, like you're saying, you do get to represent. You kind of meet both sides of the fence when you get into the bigger metropolis, the bigger cities. That's when you're meeting just that scene. You're not meeting the whole culture.
Right.
You're not meeting the life, the spirit of the city. You're just meeting that subsector of the city, the people that are there for that. And most of them there too that come into the city for that stuff are coming from a long ways away. So they're not even the city's culture.
Right.
You know, here in Detroit, we got, you know, just going up just from people from, like, Armada coming all the way down to Detroit to see a show, you're not getting a glimpse of culture of Detroit. You're getting people from Michigan to come to your show that happens to also be in Detroit.
And you feel like you notice the difference in those shows and respond differently.
Absolutely. There's more life in the air. You can kind of you can be yourself because you know that these people are being themselves. And when there's a mixed group of people all being themselves, all not afraid to dress the way they want and be who they are and kind of act how they want, it's okay for you to do whatever's necessary in your mind to be a part of that. And that's just be yourself. And that's one of the most beautiful things I think you can have with a crowd is just acceptance.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Why'd you stop doing that?
Going on the road?
Yeah.
This is lonely. I'm a really sensitive homebody. I'm a mama's boy. I am. I'm a little bitch. I am. And in fact, at one point,
I need my routines.
And
like,
I can agree with the routine factor.
Yeah.
I have this odd phobia of being the person who smells bad. I don't know why, but so like on tour, that was something overwhelming for me, is that I hadn't showered in 11 days at a time, 15 days at a time. All you've been able to do is wash your hair, face, and neck in a truck stop.
Motley Crue made a contest out of it, didn't they?
But, yeah.
How long they could go without showering and still score?
Yeah.
That's so gross. That's so like, gross.
All I see behind me is the cat carrying something a quarter of the size of her.
Oh, she got the dog again?
The dog or the monkey or something. It's distracting while I'm talking to you, gentlemen. Like, what the fuck is that? Did she kill something?
Yeah, it's like a 4-inch tall little stuffed dog that she picks up in her mouth and walks around
and
with.
It's
like
standing straight up, so it just drags the whole way.
No, she grabs it by the scruff of the neck like it's her baby.
But, yeah, so
she's kitten crazy.
So, yeah, I had this fear. So, after a while, even, like, the loneliness mixed with the absolute sensation that I could not be the person who smelled bad. For a while, I was even, like, you know, stealing different things that reminded me of home to have that scent on me and around me, different, like, lotions or whatever it might have been, just to kind of keep the scent alive. Because that for me, it was very, very defeating to not just be able to say, hey, Mom, what do you think of this? You know, because that's, like, my biggest fan when it comes to music. Anybody, any musician, really. But, you know, for me, especially, my mom's always been the person who I'm like, hey, what do you think of this track? Cool. Yeah. You dig it? All right, let's go. Hey, we're got a show tonight. Come on out. I want you to say, you know, see the new whatever routine we got going on or new whatever we're doing. I want you to hear it live and see it live and give me feedback. She's always been that thing. So when you're on
your sounding board.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And when you go on tour, it's just like, well, I'm alone. Hey, right. Mom, the show sucked, you know.
Well, so you've done a lot of different things musically.
Absolutely.
You've played different instruments, been involved in a lot of different styles of music, and had different, you've done everything from, like, you know, written scores and conducted music to just playing in bands, writing music on your own.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Did you get the artistic satisfaction out of it? I guess is the question
being on tour?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because again, you have a brand new, you know, soundboard. People are all looking at you different. No one's ever heard you. No one's seen you perform. No one's seen you as an artist, let alone a person. So they judge you for who you are on stage, not for who you were, you know, beforehand when they saw you walking in with those booty shorts, you know. So
right. Now
you have a clean slate and you get a lot of really good feedback. Absolutely. A lot of my stage shows that we brought back home, a lot of my stage presence developed on the road because you get the feedback more honestly. These aren't people that see you every week. These aren't people that see you every month. These are people that have seen you once in their life, and they're going to tell you how they feel. Mm-hmm. And that was something I really appreciated because it did help me along the lines, you know, hey, you know, great show tonight. It wasn't like, oh, I know. It was more like a, holy shit, for real? You think it was good? Thank you so much. What did you like about it? You know, give me that feedback if you know, and that was always something that I really kind of held close to. That was my gold mine on tour, was bringing things like that back with me that even now as a composer are more, they're more apt, because I think about the percussion so much even when I'm writing a big score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about how can I bring my old roots into this? How I used to be a speed metal drummer for the most part.
But, yeah.
You know, and when you're writing for an orchestra, it makes it difficult. But that is something that you think about. What would I do in this situation?
Yeah, and actually physically, how is this instrument played?
Absolutely. So
you know, what are the limitations and strengths of each instrument so that you can orchestrate them in a way that sounds very natural?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest things I took from that kind of a, you know, an angle, is that as an artist, just like I say, as an all-around, as a person, as a man, as a dad, as a composer, musician,
mm-hmm.
I would not be who I am without those experiences. So I wouldn't change it in the world. However, that doesn't make them any more glamorous.
Right. But in this case, the ends justify the means.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The end game is, you know, is a success.
So I feel like I might know the answer to this question already, but what do you feel is the most rewarding out of everything that you've done musically?
Being a composer.
Yeah.
It is so much bigger than I am. It is so much, you know, so much bigger than life. I can go into my studio and I can dream up an orchestra with 290 beautiful instruments that I couldn't afford to rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't even, and I can't find a symphony that's going to be like, oh yeah, Mikey Rutherford, we love that guy. Bring him on in.
Yeah.
Love to play his music. Not to mention a 290 piece orchestra is pretty big. So to write something like that for me, that's when there is no reality, you know.
You know, okay, so being a computer musician,
which
is a horrible term, but just for the sake of laying some ground for what I want to talk about, I think I'm rather offended when people talk negatively about technology and how, you know, I can understand when people criticize, well, you know, everything's like auto-tuned or quantized to hell or compressed to shit. And you know, there's always criticisms to be made about popular music and what technology is doing to it, but to outright criticize using computers or that newer technology is bad, I personally feel like if it wasn't for computers, I would still just be playing cover songs with my acoustic guitar.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't say that, like, having, you know, a big studio of synthesizers and reel-to-reel tape and all the... it would be unobtainable, but it would be much harder for me to accomplish, and I would probably be much less likely to do so. The hurdles would... the fact that I can overcome these hurdles much easier now has allowed me to grow and do things as an artist that I would not have done without them. I have the tools to actually grow on my own.
And I can honestly say up until, you know, until meeting you, the things that I did before, I would have knocked the person who writes music on a computer all day. Oh, that's, you know, that's bullshit. They're not even playing it. You know, because I was that musician. I played everything organically.
Yeah.
You know, but also organically, everything sounded like shit. You know, when I recorded it, it didn't sound right. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be my own producer. I had to go find someone and pay that guy out, you know, out the rear. But I already didn't have the money. You know, I'm already broke. I'm a musician.
Yeah.
You know, so as a composer and, you know, and after meeting you and kind of finding the doors that can open because of it. I mean, it's the first time. And again, I hate to go back to the whole mom thing, but I have moved my own mother to tears with music I've written with an orchestra on my computer, you know, with maybe some, you know, a couple hours of effort and knowing my, you know, where I want to go with it. But I only write to impress her. So at this point, even if I was that dick who was, you know, oh, fuck computer music, I am that computer musician, and strive for.
Yeah, I use it also. I use the computer as a strength and not as a crutch, as some people might.
Absolutely.
And I don't think I ever sat down and showed you a shortcut to anything.
No.
This was like, you're going to hear the long explanation for everything. This is really just it's another means to an end, but it doesn't make it doesn't reduce the path that you took to it. Sure, it makes it more efficient for you, which is a great thing. I mean, the fact that you can just get ideas out.
And it's affordable.
Yeah.
It is something, it's obtainable, for even people in my situation.
But it's not like we sat down and when we started, you know, working in programs like Cubase is one that I've used a lot and that I've taught you on. We didn't sit down and go, okay, well, here's why Cubase is cool, and I can auto-tune all this shit, and I can chop all this up.
In fact, I don't even know how to auto-tune still. We never went through that because...
I just don't use it.
And my mental capacity for all that information was dwindling as it was. But that, you know, to go into those things, I don't even know how to program most of the instruments still. That's something that I consult you. Hey, I want to design this instrument. Let's design this instrument. That's why I always coin you as sound designer producer. Because without you, I wouldn't have been able to produce the sounds that I wanted to design in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously you've got the skills and you've got the amount of time put into it, and you're amazing at what you do. But that's what's got me where I'm at now is being able to say, hey, Aaron, how do I do this? And how do I do it efficiently?
Right.
Not how do I do it quickly.
And a lot of times, too, like, you know, we come up against certain problems with a piece, and we're like, yeah, well, couldn't we just quantize this and make everything fit? And yes, we can, but... actually, when we try and go through that process, it almost takes just as long as it would to just re-record it.
Absolutely.
And at the end of the day, we're not completely satisfied with the results.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Taking the quote, easy or quick way is...
Yeah. Oh, and just to...
just print the damn
just
thing.
Just to... define some terms maybe that we're using here, because quantization is merely just assigning a value to something, right? That's the definition of it. But when we use it in musical terms, it's basically making the computer make everything on time.
It's giving you rhythm. It's putting it on a grid. Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, kind of replots. Replots the time.
Tightening everything up.
Yeah.
It's something that's kind of essential to making something that, like techno music, where everything moves like a piston.
Even with the scoring, I mean, you think of some of these Hollywood composers, they don't always have an orchestra at their hand. They'll use an orchestra instrument to sweeten the deal.
Yeah.
But they're not always having these 90-piece, you know, when it comes to... when it comes to, you know, people like Hans Zimmer, yeah, they probably have an orchestra literally living in their house on their dime. But that's different. You know, when you talk about the composers.
Wake up.
Yeah. Hey, come on, guys.
Guy at the cello is like, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rubs his eye, grabs a bow.
I just have my bath. Let's go make some music. look at guys like, that are really writing tunes. I mean, even Junkie XL, I every day see a picture on his Facebook of him with another orchestra or the same orchestra or whatever it is, but he's in Australia. And that's awesome. I'm proud of him. He's done a great job, and he's done a lot just a techno scene when he used a lot of that quantizing. But now he's got an orchestra to do that for him. Players that have been trained to play to that metronome on time, their whole, they have it in them. You can yell out 120, they know where you're at.
Yes.
You know, but you have a, you know, having a wonderful composer like Theodore Shapiro, who is one of my biggest influences.
I don't know if I'm familiar with
him. He did the Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
You've said that that's one of your favorite soundtracks.
I was absolutely, on my birthday, he sent me a little happy birthday message, and I about cried. I was so happy. But, that's the kind of guy who I look at and think, what is he using? What is he doing? Mm-hmm. You know, and I start that message every day. Hey, dear Theodore, what are you doing? But I don't want to finish it because I don't want to know. Because I in my mind, like the dream that he's doing the same thing I am, sitting down in his basement or his studio, writing his ass off, finding the right stuff, and then going and finding a musician who can sweeten the pot. And taking the entire orchestra and saying, okay, you are my pot. Now I got to find something to mix you with. And I got to find a spoon to make this happen.
I lost the analogy. I'm sorry.
No worry. Okay, so more so, I don't think that Theodore Shapiro has an orchestra in his basement.
Yeah,
and I like to think that he writes his music on his own little system, and then makes it work that way, and finds, you know, okay, I wanted the cello to be out here. I want to get a real cello player to have him do this part. I want to have horns squawking in the background. Let me get a, you know, 5-piece horn section to build this up.
Yeah.
Versus saying, okay, I have this whole entire orchestra here. I just got to write something and then go tell him to do it. And that's how I'm going to do it.
So here's a question that I think I've thought about before, but I don't know if I've ever asked you. You seem to, you study... You don't seem to. I know that you study a lot of soundtracks.
Yes.
And you've watched a lot of movies. I think you might be the only person that I know that's watched more movies than I have. How do you do this? I mean, do you enjoy the movie and enjoy the soundtrack in the moment and go back and analyze it? Or are you constantly in that mode of, like, when you hear music cues come in, you're like analyzing, okay, what is this doing and what are the parts of it and why does it feel like this? Or
I think that most of the time I'm caught up in the music thinking, okay, how does this relate to the scene? What was he trying to portray? What is the main character's idea and why is he trying to play that through music? But a good movie?
Yeah.
Makes me say, oh shit, I didn't listen. I gotta go back and hear it again because the composer did that well. If he does that good, you know, I can actually comment on, even though Junkie XL is one of those top of the line kind of Harlem Globetrotter composers.
Yeah.
I can say right now that his score for, what was the last one? Divergent. I lost it. I heard the score before I watched the movie, and during the movie was that the part? Was that the song I was listening to? I can't remember. I'll have to watch it again. And I watched it again. And I missed it again. Because he does that good of portraying the thoughts, the emotions. And it is the typical Twilight teeny bopper movie. But when it came to the synergy of movie and music, it's very few and far between you get that. You get that kind of emotion in kind of a mashup between emotion and music that is so strong that you were feeling what you were feeling because he wanted you to feel it. You know, were feeling what you were feeling because she was feeling it.
Yeah.
And those things to me are, that's when I get lost. That's, you know, and Hans Zimmer's done it with his song Time. Is that what's on right now? What's on right now?
It's Hans Zimmer's greatest soundtracks mixed in 2012.
That is definitely not Time, but that is absolutely wonderful. Either way, attention deficit, it was shiny. So he's...
Whatever that is.
Yeah. those pieces to me, like during Inception, when Time starts playing, you're not thinking about, oh my God, what a beautiful song. You're thinking of, oh my God, what a moment.
Yeah.
What a moment in cinema. What a way to, you know. So I think the best way I can answer it is, if the movie sucks, the music better be damn good. because that's all I'm listening to. If the music is terrible, then they better have paid some high dollar actors to do their thing, because I'm going to be ignoring the shit out of it. You know, and I'm going to get really upset because that will take me away. Movies like the Lovely Bones had a soundtrack like that. That was like sci-fi almost. And I understand she was an actor, yeah, blah, 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 but it was a terrible choice of music for that movie, and I was...
It took you out of the moment.
In the theater, got up and was like, I'm going to get my money back. I'll watch this at home. I'm not fucking doing this. I was absolutely, like, slapped in the face. Like, how dare you? You know?
Yeah.
how dare you put this kind of music to this movie? Because this movie is not that kind of... It's not that kind of movie. It took me way out.
Right. Well, it makes me think of Steven Soderbergh's show, The Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched any of that?
I have. During your recommendation, but yeah, I absolutely have.
So, this is you could call this like a period piece, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not the only, there's a lot of these on television, and they either go with, if, like, for example, Boardwalk Empire has music in it, but it's either your very classical kind of symphonic stuff mm-hmm. to set tone, or it's right. period appropriate music.
Right, absolutely.
You know, it's that jazz era.
It's real dirty, kind of gritty almost. But the movie. It's Prohibition.
Right, and it does add to the whole atmosphere
absolutely.
Of it. Absolutely. Now, Steven Soderbergh went the complete opposite direction, and he's got this whole thing is set around like 1900, but all the music is completely electronic. Now, it does still have like a vintage kind of electronic vibe, but I mean that's only taking you back to like late 70s, right. early 80s.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the time period or anything that is happening at that point.
I
love the score for it. It's very simple.
Absolutely.
It's very sparse. It's not like, you know, pumping drums or anything like that. But it is very electronic and very kind of sterile sounding.
And
you know, it's.
But that's kind of one of the wonderful things about this is, I mean, Soderbergh is already is an incredible. I mean, he's a legend in his own. I mean, mm-hmm. he's both, you know, he's all the man, the myth, and the legend. He does exist. But I mean, for me, some of the stuff he brings up is so. It's uncomfortable. It's hard to listen to when you're watching the scene because it is the scene. You feel the scene. And with this kind of a thing, when he uses all electronics on something like The Nick, and it is set in a period piece, I think the coolest thing is he appeals to modern day emotion by doing it. He shows you an advance in technology of a thousand, you know, 100 years later, whatever it is, 100 years later nowadays, the emotion we would feel in a moment like this and how we would perceive it, because that's how we're trained to perceive emotion right now, you know, with our cinema is by the music. So this is one of those cases where, it didn't make much sense when you first hear it. Like, what the hell's that? And then as you start watching, when the synth starts pumping, you start feeling that, mm-hmm. your heart goes in time with it. Your breathing gets a little weird because you're feeling that. I mean, he's a genius. That's you rub a lamp and Soderbergh comes out. I mean, he's that, you know, he's that person for me. So and for you, rather, I mean, you showed him to me, really.
Yeah.
I never noticed him otherwise, you know, from, you know, Tom, Dick, or Harry. But when you brought it to my attention, I ventured into a little bit of his stuff to kind of get in your mindset.
Even when the material that he's making is just really fluff, like the oceans, they're still, I find them fascinating to watch. I mean, the style of the way he shoots scenes and the music that he works a lot with David Holmes this is another guy like Junkie XL who came up in the techno scene and found a bridge over to doing score work and has done so brilliantly. But his whole sense of style, he's definitely his own thing. You can see where he takes a lot of influences from different things, but I think he puts out one of the most original products of Hollywood that Hollywood is producing.
Yeah, and that's where I can say too that he does a more of a soundtrack for emotion, not of emotion. And I think that's the coolest thing is he writes for the moment you're going to feel, not for the moment I felt when writing this. You know, because I think Junkie XL's thing is this is the moment that she felt. This is the moment, you know, that I felt this, and you're going to feel it because I'm going to write it. Whereas Soderbergh's more like, you know what? I think this is how you're going to feel. And you know what? Yeah, I think you're going to feel like this is going to be tense. Let me make it tense, you know?
Am I interrupting you, too?
What?
You guys on a mandate over here?
Well, I'm sorry. Did you have a question for our guest today? All right, we'll stop holding hands and staring at each other lovingly. We're making you uncomfortable.
Yes. Cat over here, look me in the eyes. I don't want to look at him.
But you kind of, I guess, answer my question without me having to ask it. You did not find it distracting. It didn't take you out of the moment.
For the first time I heard it, I was like, what the hell's that? And
yeah.
For the first 30 seconds. And then it was just like, that's the show. That's how the show works, because the music is what it is.
Yeah, I think about the first 10 minutes of the show, I was like, well, this is an interesting choice. Yeah,
it's very engaging, though. It makes it more gripping. It makes those thriller suspense moments more thrilling and suspense. It puts you on the edge of the seat with your fingers dug in the cushion for a second, like, what the hell's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, and that is Soderbergh. I mean, he's just, that's what he does.
And also very effective use of themes.
Oh, 100%.
It's like, it's equivalent to watching Star Wars, where you know, like, oh shit, oh shit music is coming. Like, you know, all you see is a spaceship in space, but dun, 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 and you know who the fuck is in that spaceship.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh, fuck, here he comes.
Yeah, I could even say that thing I always forget his name. It's a Ramin. I don't want to butcher his name. This guy's pretty incredible, but from Game of Thrones. Another show that you brought to me, the effective use of themes in that one is, but he's much more on a larger orchestral scale than most.
Right,
in,
he goes
in that,
like,
position.
Okay, you could kind of put this in the genre of period piece, even though it's complete fantasy. It's like very medieval in nature. And when people go back to, anytime you pretty much get like pre-recorded music in your setting, it's just straight orchestral.
Yeah, they just opt for it.
Or maybe like a lot of chants.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the go-to.
The Gladiator soundtrack is a huge, huge example of that.
I mean,
they even tell you the time at one point, and I can't even remember the year. I mean, when they were supposedly shooting, you know, what the movie was about, the period. But it doesn't matter, because Hans comes in and just gives you this epic scale, and that works because of the vast land shots, the vast battle sequences, the epic sorrow you're feeling. And I always forget the lady's name who sang on it, Lisa Gerrard. When she sings those moments of sadness, it feels like those moments of sadness, because she is an amazing vocalist.
Oh wait, Lisa Gerrard was a member of Dead Can Dance.
Oh really?
Wasn't she?
I didn't know that.
You research that guy on the internet over there? I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because are you familiar with Dead Can Dance?
I'm very, very vaguely, but not nothing crazy. I don't know a whole lot.
Kind of one of the more out there bands. I don't even know how to describe them. They're quite orchestral in their sound, although it's almost entirely synthetic, I believe.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yep. She was Lisa Gerrard,
yeah.
Is it the same Lisa Gerrard, though?
I bet you.
It was the same Hans Zimmer in The Buggles, so I would imagine this could be the same. This could have.
He was in The Buggles?
Yeah, dude, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Keyboard player?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Yeah, he's in the video, man. The video that did kill the radio star. It's in there. It's mildly disheartening when you see him, but
Lisa Gerrard has an amazing voice. I own not only her work with Dead Can Dance, but her solo work.
Her solo work is incredible.
Golden Globe nominee and former Dead Can Dance member.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
I knew I recognized that name.
Yeah. She's got that kind of voice that kind of like Soderbergh does with his arrangements. That. Mm-hmm. Whatever she thinks you're going to feel, or, I mean, even with her power, with what she wants you to feel, you're going to feel it. And that's, I mean, she can sing happy, but she can really, really sing discord and sadness. And
yes.
that's where with Gladiator, she was so on point, is that is a lot of sad stories being told throughout that movie.
Okay, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that soundtrack.
That soundtrack's incredible.
The movie was kind of forgettable for me.
I mean, think about it, though. I mean, it's like just like everything else. It's like Braveheart on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, for me, at least.
I never saw Braveheart.
Braveheart's amazing.
Yeah.
I'll give that one up.
And I'm part Scottish, too.
Oh, wow.
This is Dead Can Dance.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar, but I could get familiar with it. It's definitely pretty. I think you'd
really enjoy.
I think I would too, just based on that movement.
It's black t-shirt and nail polish time.
You know, I think they had a lot of fans from the industrial scene. They were like late 80s. I think
would this be on a mixtape of Bauhaus?
Yeah, probably.
Sisters of Mercy.
Yeah. Maybe more like that Neubauten band. What? Einstein Neubauten? Something. I'm butchering the name of a band that just has like rabid fans.
Oh, this sounds like I should be talking to a fat chick at the city club. Oh, for sure. I should be. Yeah.
Yeah.
But 2:30, 3:30.
Well, this is when I listen to Dead Can Dance a lot, I listen to just about everything that came out on this label as well, which is 4AD. And I don't, are you guys familiar with the label 4AD?
I'm lightly familiar with
this. This is the label that brought us the Breeders and the Pixies.
That the Pixies is where I knew them
the
from.
Throwing yeah. Muses. Well, they put out a lot of work by a local artist, records under the name, his name is Alive, Warren DeFever.
Okay.
One of my favorite artists, actually, regardless of the fact that he happens to be from Livonia. But this was, the one thing about 4AD, while it had a lot of different, it wasn't like a label like Merge or something where it's like an independent record and a record label and you kind of have like a theme, like these are all like indie rock bands or these are all metal bands. It was kind of all over the place as far as what kind of music they put out, but it was all kind of more in the alternative genre, you could call it. But it also had, they had one art, I wish I could remember the name of the guy who did the art for all of the for all the releases for 4AD, because it was a very specific look. It was kind of like a collage type of like photographs and painting and all that, and objects. All I'm just totally distracted by the fact that you started taking pictures.
You said being photographed, and I thought it was a good time.
Yeah, the Breeders album. He did the Breeders album.
Photo ops, I thought it was a good time. I mean, Hattie's got his good side forward.
I was going to play, like, you know, the Pixies, but Apple fucking ruined Gigantic for us.
Why? What do you mean? Oh, yeah. I forgot about the commercial.
This song rocks better anyway. Or more. Harder. What are you going to talk about?
Oh man, I'm a big fan of both. I don't know if I could say who was better.
Breeders
than Breeders
had more
of the
that
Pixies.
The raw punk rock energy to them.
Really?
In my opinion,
I disagree with that. I think there's a. I don't know. I would say the Pixies had more of that, but the songs that became popular for them weren't really representative of that either, so I can see your point.
The bong in this reggae song.
Vaughn Oliver. That's the guy who did all the artwork for the early 4AD stuff. I guess the reason I bring that up is because that was, if something came out on 4AD, I was buying it. And maybe it was somewhat of the collector mentality. I collect comic books and I've got to have, like, you know, every issue of whatever comic book that I'm into. I don't experience that anymore. There's even labels where I've traditionally, the labels that are still around, more independent labels that I've traditionally been into everything. I don't know if my tastes are changing or if that they're trying to, you know, broaden their audience or whatever, but it's just not, I don't know of any given label where I would just like blindly, oh, it's on that label.
I
would definitely pick that up.
I haven't done that in 10 years, right. Honestly. And at that point, in fact, before... it's been longer than 10, probably more closer to like 12, 10 years. Yeah, easy.
Yeah.
The last label I would have done that with a little bit further back in the day, for me at least, would have been Victory Records. I used to buy everything they put out. Everything, I loved it. I mean, that was my scene I was in, and that I just, everything they put out for me was gold. That's what I wanted. And then I got a lot of news that they were just screwing their bands over.
Yeah.
And from then on, whatever band I was buying before, I went and sought them out, and I wouldn't just go attach myself to their labels, because no labels were quality at that point that they were into, or they were self-released. I mean, Brand New and, you know, bands like that and Straight Light Run, you know, they were all independent artists, and I don't think Brand New was ever signed to Victory, but they were always in that kind of, they were trying to push themselves off on their own scene, you know, and you know, there's a lot of Long Island feuds going on over there that kind of brought more of them independently out to be circular by themselves, to not have a label represent them. And that's Victory, that was the label I was all about. And when they shut down, it was just like, I'm not doing it again. You know, and I'd done it with so many other ones before. Century Media was another one that was putting out those big orchestral bands with the big front girl, you know, the Lacuna Coil, stuff like that, Nightwish. Yeah. style, and I was really into those that kind of music for a while because it was so big. It was another thing that was after a while they started signing these bands that just had no hope. They weren't quality, and a lot of the labels just tanked. And I think I can kind of meet with you on that. There's nothing worth collecting. There's nothing out there
right.
that I've found that's been like, that is it. This label knows good music.
Because like any business, it's about growth. And when you start from, this label represents this certain scene or this collective of people that are all kind of making the same type of music or all like-minded, you are limiting your growth by having that ethos.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so as soon as you want to actually grow your business, you have to step outside of that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's understandable.
It's understandable, I guess, but it depends on what your end result is.
It depends on, again, like you said before, it depends on the end game.
Yeah,
you know, it depends on what you're pushing for. You know, for me, I think if in the situation, obviously it might be different, but knowing, you know, if I had a record label with a distinct following, with a very heavily profitable too. I mean, it's not like this mm-hmm. following was just in your house. I mean, that was it's broadened for a reason. There's a reason why you wanted it, because it was appealing, and there's more people out there that was appealing. We want more of it, and they just kept being faithful, you know, faithful customers. But when you start dragging out, you know, the various, I guess, aspects of it, it is going to start getting a little rough, and you're going to start attracting other people. But those people that you had from the beginning are going to go away. You know, and you're
right.
in a new market, but it's not going to be, you know, it, just like you said, it's not worth collecting. It's just not, it's not going to be there.
And then if you expand, like Aaron says, then you're accused of being a sellout because you need to keep your business moving forward.
Yeah, or you just kind of, you know, everything gets watered down.
More diluted. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not silly, because a lot of the stuff I liked before was at the time I was, it was in a lot of the metal bands, so it was heavy, it was punchy, it was what I wanted, it was what I wanted to hear, Between the Buried and Me, I think they did a release on there at one point, it's what I wanted to hear, it's that whole entire following was built along me just falling in love with Victory's next installment,
mm-hmm.
and it was like overnight, they just started signing this band, that band, and then, you know, the dream to being on Victory Records was like, no way. I'll release independent before I go back, because of their expanse, and all it did for them was screw them over. They tanked. I mean, I don't know if they're still around. I have not looked into them in, like I said, 10 years. I didn't even look at anything by them, in particular.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for clicking. Thanks for liking. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for subscribing for free by clicking through the iTunes banner on ChristopherMedia.net. Thank you for telling a friend. I probably already said that, but that's how important it is, because that's how podcasts work. We drop every Monday and Thursday. Check out all of the other shows on ChristopherMedia.net. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.